We're going to move on to our second speaker, who is Laura Walls. Laura is the William and Hazel White Professor of English at Notre Dame. She's also the author of Henry David Thoreau, A Life. Laura, why don't you take us through your 6 minutes?
Thank you, Larry. All right. Change of subject here. I would say that Thoreau matters today because he was trying to change our minds. Of course, he can't do that because the only person who can change your mind is yourself, and Thoreau knows that. But he has to try anyway because he sees somewhere out on the horizon a new world rising, and he thinks that it won't rise unless he can get a few of us to open our minds and hearts so that we can see it too. Then we might have a shot at a better future together, all of us. And by us, Thoreau means all of us. The immense plenitude of planet Earth. That includes all the human peoples, of course. The ones he was concerned with were those that modern America was working overtime to erase. He points to the Africans whom we enslaved to build the land of the free. The Native Americans whose land it was, the women who were doing the unpaid and invisible work of the household, the Mexicans against whom America had declared a war of conquest, and the Irish refugees who were at that moment fleeing to Boston in such numbers. But Thoreau also meant the plenitude of living beings and vital processes that weave together the cosmos beyond our built, human-centered world, all that we collectively call nature. And so we call Thoreau a nature writer. But he was more, a writer of the cosmos, which he knew meant the beauty and order of the universe, from deep geological time to the fragile and ever-changing surface of the planet Earth, that great whole, which takes up and incorporates human agency without being contained by it. Thoreau went to Walden to find the cosmos and our place in it. He came back to town to tell us what he found. So let's talk about Walden. Thoreau, we often hear, was a hermit in the woods. What selfishness, what misanthropy, say the cynics. Hey, didn't his mom do his laundry? Well, no, actually. Thoreau's family home was a boarding house, and the laundry was done by the Irish immigrants they took in to help them get a foothold in the American economic system. But that's beside the point. Walden Pond was a little over a mile's walk from the center of town, Concord, Massachusetts. Every few days, Thoreau walked home to do his chores and join his family for dinner. If being part of a loving family and having friends one visits and helps out his hypocrisy, then, my God, are we all in trouble. But even back then, there were, yes, cynics and skeptics, folks who mocked Thoreau because he was different. He had a different way of looking at the world. He was shy and awkward, and he loved the world's wild beings. Some of those critics were popular tastemakers with loud voices, which didn't help Thoreau's cause much. As for him, yes, he was a dreamer, but he was also a sworn realist. In my biography, I argue that he had to be. He was born into a family of French immigrants and Yankee tradesmen who were just scraping by. The family scrimped to send Henry to Harvard, where he was derided because he couldn't afford a proper coat. They prospered only after he returned from Harvard and applied his learning, his education, to his father's struggling family business, which was making pencils. Now, Thoreau loved machinery. He loved knowing how things work. He invented both the modern pencil, as we know it, and he invented the machinery to make it. After all, everyone needs a good pencil. And Thoreau needed good pencils, too, so he could take notes and make sketches on his long daily walks, jotting ideas and observations in all weathers. These penciled notes were the germs of his many books and essays. Henry Thoreau was restless, strange. He was driven by that need to see into the heart of the cosmos. More than one of his friends thought he could have been a good monk. He relished good conversation, but he also fiercely guarded the solitude he needed for a creative life, the inner life of an artist. He'd gone to Walden with his life in crisis, after veering from one dead end to another, until the only choice left to this young man was to follow the crazy dream he'd cherished since childhood, which was to go away and live by the pond and write his way through the changing seasons. And he did just that for 2 years, from July 1845 to September 1847, on land that Emerson had purchased. While at Walden, Thoreau wrote one book and much of another, and a few essays too. One of them was Civil Disobedience. To explain to his townsmen why he went to jail rather than pay the taxes that supported slavery, the war against Mexico, and the removal of Native Americans. It's the mark of an age different than our own, perhaps, that his fellow townspeople came to his lectures and listened respectfully. And he changed a few of their minds, too. Thoreau was eccentric and sharp-tongued and funny, and he stepped on toes, and they loved him for it, and they respected what he had to say. When Thoreau died, just as the Civil War was starting, the town released all the school children from school that day so they could attend his funeral. I'll close with just a handful of things that he told his neighbors and is telling us. One, keep it simple. That makes both our mistakes and what we care about easier to see. Two, no, you can't move to Walden Pond. Walden is not a place to live, but a philosophy of life. If it isn't portable, it does no good. Three, sometimes Walden Pond isn't where you need to be in any case. When politics turn the world into what Thoreau called hell, you need to go not to nature but to a public stage to offer to the world without flinching your most scorching critique of injustice. And finally, four, but sometimes Walden Pond is exactly where you need to go, because nature is where you can see how political injustice and environmental depredation share a common cause. Yes, politics is big, but the cosmos is bigger. As Thoreau declared to his conquered neighbors, your scheme must be the framework of the universe. All other schemes will soon be in ruins. So, is Thoreau a pain and a braggart? Yes, of course he is. But he believed that a true democracy could tolerate a few souls who, like himself, lived independent lives. He called them democracy's wild fruits. And as he said of Walt Whitman, in whom Thoreau recognized a fellow spirit, there are a few who earn that right. I would agree, and I'm glad that he claimed that right for us as well. That's the end of my prepared remarks.
Thanks, Laura.